marijuana is an addictive drug which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death. Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind. If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face-to-face with the monster of marijuana, he'd drop dead from fright.
You know, it's not easy countering 7 decades of propaganda in a 2-hour show, but let's try. It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Reefer Madness Debunked.
Welcome back, everybody, in Reefer Madness Debunked. Today we go to our phone lines to visit with an old friend of the show, Paul Armentano, the Deputy Director of Normal. Paul, are you there?
I am here, Russ.
Oh, thank you for being here, and thanks for stepping in on short notice. But today I listened to the DA explain the autopsy results in the Sandra Bland case, and there is a lot of conflicting weird things going on there about marijuana in her system. I wanted to see if we could get your response to some of that. I was wondering if you've had a chance to take a look at the story.
I have seen some stories, although what I have seen has been pretty short on details.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'll give you what I've got, what I gleaned from the press conference. One of the quotes that he mentioned was that a screening... A basic screening, they said, that they do for marijuana revealed that she had a significant amount of marijuana in her system that may indicate she had either ingested or smoked a lot of marijuana by the time of her death. But then later in the press conference, when pushed on this by some of the media, and the media asked like 12 questions about marijuana, it was amazing. When pushed on this, he said, well, it was a presumptive test for marijuana, not qualitative. We'll be doing gas chromatography tests to get a qualitative answer. So is there anything in that that gives you any better clues as to what's going on here?
Yes, it does. So a presumptive test is known as an immunoassay test. And what that test does is it seeks a reaction in the sample. And if one obtains that particular reaction, you presume that the reaction is taking place because certain compounds that trigger that reaction are present in the sample. But that's why it is presumptive and not qualitative. It doesn't identify what's in the sample, and it doesn't quantify the how much of what may be in the sample, because the test itself does not have the ability to provide that information. The test itself just looks for a particular response. If that response is given, then one presumes a certain level of specific compounds are present, but in order to confirm that result, one has to run that sample through a gas chromatography mass spectrometer test. And then, unlike the immunoassay test, the GCMS test actually identifies if these presumed compounds are present, and it quantifies at what amount they're present. That clearly hasn't been done, so the remarks that are made about a large amount of marijuana, or even the idea that marijuana itself was identified, at this point are specious.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, is this assay test is just, is somebody on drugs, and then we're going to find out later how much they're on. So trying to say that it was a significant amount just means significant enough to trip the test, right?
Exactly. That is precisely what it means.
Okay. Now, as I've tried to explain this to people, I always try to give them a thumbnail on this, but say, first of all, he was very clear about saying this was THC in blood and not metabolites, because later on in the press conference, he said, and it was something to the effect, and I hate myself that I didn't record this, but it was something to the effect that when they do the gas chromatography test, they'll be able to know how much active THC there was versus how much metabolite. And he actually gave a very good definition of metabolites, one I've heard you give many times. It means it's already been metabolized. But if we can compare the active THC and the metabolized THC, we might get an idea how much she smoked and how long ago she had ingested it. So that suggests to me he was talking about active THC, but is there any truth to that, where we can compare metabolites to active and get time and place, or time and amount, I mean?
So there were a couple papers published theorizing that one can take the ratio of active THC to carboxy THC metabolite in the samples of occasional users, and using a particular algorithm have some sense of back extrapolation and try and estimate when it may have been this person last used marijuana. That theory has not there's really not a consensus among experts that one can do that, although, like I said, it has been theorized. Where there is, though, in particular a consensus, is that if we're talking about more habitual users as opposed to occasional users, then all bets are off. And there's really no information we can glean from a active THC to carboxy THC ratio that's going to allow for back extrapolation. And again, when one looks through the literature, you tend to see time and time again, many researchers simply dismiss this idea we can back extrapolate time of past use from these toxicology screens at all.
All right. Now, we're speaking with Paul Armentano, Normal's deputy director and an acclaimed expert on all of these things. We're talking about drug testing and the various aspects of the science in there. And there's another. So if we take the word substantial out of this and that we say, OK, this assay showed that she had marijuana in her system. The science does show us that after 3 days, that's entirely possible. She could have smoked 3-4 days ago and that still could have been tripped.
It is entirely possible. In fact, there was a paper published in April of this year where the researchers looked at a cohort of fairly regular users over 1 week of monitored abstinence, and they had two relevant findings. One was that it was not uncommon to have individuals on day seven, so after a week of abstinence, still testing positive for demonstrable levels of THC in their blood. What was even more relevant is the notion that THC blood levels do not consistently fall over time during this terminal elimination phase. In fact, what these researchers found was that there were day-to-day spikes in subjects' blood THC levels during a period of time where they were not reinitiating their marijuana use. In fact, there was one particular subject in this study who I believe on day two tested positive at 3 nanograms per milliliter of THC in blood, but then on day three tested positive at 10 nanograms per milliliter of THC in his or her blood. And again, the researchers were aware that no new marijuana use had taken place in the individuals who are in this cohort. So again, we're talking about a substance that has a pharmacokinetic profile or absorption profile that is widely variable. And again, that's why when we're talking about cannabis and we're trying to make these sort of back extrapolations or make these presumptions in regard to whether one may or may not be under the influence of marijuana based on a toxicology screen result alone, all bets are off. We just can't do it.
Thank you, Paul Armentano, for that. All bets are off. Now, as far as how, you know, let's be devil's advocate here. Let's say she did have a significant amount of THC in her system, which begs the question, how was it there for so long after 3 days? Or did she get marijuana in the jail, which we all know our jails are porous. You can get anything in these jails. But the quote from the DA here that gave me pause was where he was asked by the media about the possibility that if she were under the influence of THC, would this have contributed to being in a suicidal state of mind? They've pointed out Facebook page posts that she's done about being depressed and noted that the autopsy noted that she had cut marks on her arm, like people that will cut for, you know, when they're depressed. And he said, and this is a pretty close to an exact quote, that marijuana is psychoactive and a mood amplifier that may have exacerbated existing mental conditions, referring to suicidality. Do we have any science on that?
Well, we do know that THC, itself has an affinity to receptors in the brain that are largely located in the frontal lobe, which regulates mood. So that's why, in fact, cannabis is a mood-altering substance. And we also know that there are some relationships between individuals who suffer from depression or mental illness self-medicating with cannabis. And then there's some concern and some theories in regard to whether the heavy use of marijuana, particularly in younger cohorts, might actually trigger or exacerbate some of these conditions. So the relationship is not definitive and appears to go both ways. But the real question here, and what I clearly seem to be the inference from releasing this information to the public, is the notion that somehow this woman may have still been under the influence of marijuana multiple days later. And regardless of what her toxicology screen shows, we do know that the acute impairment phase of marijuana tends to be somewhere between 20 to 60 minutes after the use of marijuana, and that the effects of the drug overall tend to wear off within 2 to 3 hours. So that inference clearly would not be based on the scientific evidence and really seems to be more just an attempt at character assassination.
Yeah, the DA here was pressed on that by the media, and he said it's indicative of a large amount of marijuana because a large amount of active THC 3 days after her arrest, inferring that since she tripped the test 3 days later, she must have had a large amount in her. And then when a follow-up question, the media asked, how could smoking pot 3 days ago affect her mental state? He said, if THC is in your system, it's affecting your mental state. Last word, Paul Armentano, on that.
Again, that is a theory, but it is a theory that has largely been dismissed by the experts in the field. But again, I think what is so unfortunate in this case is that the media will begin focusing on this ancillary issue regarding marijuana and not focus on the fact that here was a woman who was unjustly arrested, spent 3 days in jail for reasons we were still not clear on, and then ended up dying as a result of an arrest that was not based on probable cause to begin with. That's the real story here, not whether or not she's among the almost half of Americans who admit to experimenting with marijuana, or about the 1 in 9 Americans who acknowledge using marijuana regularly.
Yeah, and almost 1 in 5 in her age group. And another stat for you, Paul, before we go. There have been 9 days this year where police in the United States have not killed somebody.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Thank you for your input and expertise on short notice. Paul Armentano, Deputy Director of Normal. Check them all out at normal.org and send your donations so we can have more great expertise like this. Thanks, Paul, for joining us.
Thank you, Russ.
All right. We got to take a break, go into hour two. That's all the time we got for the podcast, but thanks for joining us. Join us live sometime on Toker Talk Radio, 4 o'clock Pacific time. Replays at 7 o'clock Pacific. We let what's left of my hair down, and we take your calls at 84-420 Radio. For everyone here in Legal Potland, I'm Radical Russ, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. Yeah. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. Yeah. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Yeah.